Social media has redefined the way we're experiencing the war in Gaza, with citizens and regular users alike playing a crucial role in sharing minute-by-minute updates from the region. Israel's continuous bombardment of Gaza for 6 months now since the October 7 attack by Hamas has propelled numerous activists to the forefront, utilizing social media to shed light on the harrowing realities of the suffering in the region. Figures like Mu'taz Azayza, Bissan Auda, and Palestia Al-Aqad have brought powerful content straight to our screens. But this increased visibility has been reported to result in censorship, despite social media platforms denying engaging in censorship and focusing more on entertainment over politics. Recent developments such as Instagram's restrictions on political content, which has not yet been implemented in some parts of the Middle East, and algorithms prioritizing specific content for public safety have sparked concerns about stifling news organizations that provide around-the-clock coverage. We have spoken to activists and experts to delve deeper and explore the type of content that resonates with users today, especially the younger generation, and if there is heightened political awareness among them. This is Beyond the Headlines, and I'm your host, Thuraya Abdullahi. In this episode, as we mark 6 months since the start of the Israel-Gaza war, we take a moment to look at the role of social media in the current conflict. But before we start, please make sure to follow and subscribe to get all new episodes as soon as they come out. A few weeks after October 7, Rahma Zain emerged in the spotlight after a viral video of her. She went to Rafah, the Egyptian side of the border with Gaza, along with local and international aid organizations to volunteer and deliver aid to Gaza. In her viral footage, Rahma was confronting CNN's international correspondent Clarissa Ward, protesting against the war coverage by Western media. Millions of users on social media watched and shared the video, and it even ended up being aired on CNN itself. Since that time until today, Rahma has been sharing a lot of content about the conflict in Gaza and even taking part in international events to keep spreading awareness about the humanitarian crisis. I spoke to Rahma to learn more about her experience advocating on social media. Rahma, you have been incredibly active on social media, notably raising awareness about Gaza for nearly 6 months. Could you share your experience and also tell us what it's been like so far?
So I think I have just been a normal user like everyone else, attempting to showcase what is happening on ground versus mainstream media that has been covering what's happening because they're blatant war crimes. So it is a duty for everyone to get access to people in Palestine, to shed light on the history, to really inform everyone else about this occupation.
Social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok have been taking action against posts that they say violate community guidelines. Do you believe in the concept of like shadow banning, and have you encountered similar instances? And then also, how do you continue your awareness efforts despite being shadow banned?
You know, it's something I joke around with my friends. I'm like, maybe they did their market research. They realized the only way to stop Arab, African social media users is to intercept the families. So they got my mom to unfollow me, which kind of created a fitna in the family. Yes, it's absolutely crazy. There, at one point, I couldn't go on lives. There was at one point you were restricted to follow me. It was you'd get a caution. Be careful. This is a platform that spreads false information. And I think social media had been predominantly for a very long time being used to promote consumerism, to promote a certain type of culture, even if it's different to others. And now that social media is being used to change the narrative, it's as if we were pointing something at you and it just sort of changed and now is pointing back at them.
Now, there is so many narratives online. There is so many information online. There is misinformation. There's good information. There's content that can help you personally, right? What advice would you give to the younger generation to kind of identify what sources to look for? How do you verify content?
It is your responsibility. You know, it really is your responsibility. And a part of being able to own your narrative is knowing yourself. And that doesn't mean not being malleable and changing your opinion and evolving and developing and not being rigid. but really appreciating your identity, not letting anyone make you think less of yourself, think less of your culture, of your identity, to really stand up and head up and be really proud of it. So be proud of yourself. Know that you have this responsibility to gain knowledge, to have awareness. It's not cool anymore not to know. And it's not the case anymore. Sure, of course, I find out on social media the latest trend and the latest bag. I love memes. I send memes to my friends all the time. But have a balanced life where you care about this and you also care about humanity. It's not just consumerism, and being fed and having zero attention span and just being fed all these things. Find things that also nurture your soul and allow you to be a better person in this world. Because from what we're seeing today, you are the leaders of tomorrow. And we need leaders with a heart who know themselves, who are proud of their identity and their culture, and do not put the wrong entities on a pedestal.
Rahma is like many users now who are using social media to provide a platform to post about the ongoing conflict. In Gaza, many citizen journalists have been using platforms like Instagram to offer a first-hand perspective on the devastation and challenges faced by Gazans amid the war. Through their posts, which include raw footage of explosions, scenes of destruction, and personal reflections, these Palestinians offer a window into the human side of the conflict, garnering empathy and support from around the world. Therefore, the impact of social media activism on public opinion and political discourse has been huge recently. It has even put pressure on some governments to take action. So what's the impact of all of that, and were platforms ready for such a role? I spoke to Ben Whitelaw, who is a consultant at Financial Times Strategies and the host of Control Alt Speech podcast that covers internet moderation. I asked him about the preferences of users, especially younger generations.
I think the presumption is that younger consumers will be less engaged in the news, and particularly hard news and current affairs, than previous generations. And what we found from our research in three countries across 45 very in-depth interviews was that people wanted that kind of hard news, and they wanted to understand what was going on in the world, but the way in which it was delivered to them wasn't necessarily in the format or with the tone that they would most like it to be. So there was essentially a gap, we found, between how news was being provided to them in the current formats by traditional publishers, and also what they wanted, which was very different and left this kind of feeling, I think, of not being catered for. And this is something that news providers and broadcasters in particular are thinking more about how to bridge that gap.
Could we say, because of the increase in citizen journalists who are kind of sending us updates from war zones themselves, do you think that will kind of eclipse like factual content from organization becoming an important source of information?
I mean, social media is a vital, vital source of information for people around major news events, including wars like the one in Gaza and also in Ukraine. For years now, we've heard from people on the front lines of these stories almost before traditional media organizations, and they provide unique perspectives that traditional publishers and news outlets can't always provide. You know, as much as 70% of people in some countries get their news primarily from social media. And so it's really, really important that publishers are on social media, and, you know, that we take the medium seriously. I do think that there is still a role for traditional media, fact-checked media, where there are rigorous processes in place to ensure the quality and validity of the stories that come through. But I think they are complemented by that very raw testimony that we see coming through in these stories on social media. And I think there is space for both, and for them to work in tandem, and for people to have both of them in a balanced diet, to understand both kind of live unfolding events and the more considered, balanced, kind of rounded coverage that traditional publishers usually provide.
It's very amazing to see social media kind of evolve right in front of us over the years. Do you think it's kind of becoming a political tool? If so, how do you believe like platforms are responding to the shift? Also keeping in mind the recent Shahid ban.
I think certainly social media is becoming more politicized in its usage. We see that in lots of countries all across the world. And this being an election year, you know, there are millions of people going to the polls and serious concerns about the way that people are receiving information and the extent to which it is true. So this is an inherently political issue, I think, whatever side of the fence you sit on. And, you know, that is something that platforms are trying to mitigate in terms of their operations around the elections and putting in interventions and measures in place to try and mitigate those things. One that you mentioned is the Meta's ban on the word Shahid, which this week was the subject of a policy advisory by an organization called the Oversight Board, which is an independent organization funded by Meta to provide advice on content moderation policies. And that group of people, which is around 20 scholars, human rights experts, Nobel laureates, have said that actually the ban on Shahid should cease to exist, and Meta should not allow that ban to stand because of the nature of the word and its various meanings, which at the moment the platform doesn't allow for. And so there are lots of cases like this where I think platforms have a responsibility to think carefully about its moderation policies and the guidelines that it provides to users in order for people to be able to share their views and information relating to topics that matter to them. So, you know, I welcome and I'm pleased that this issue with relation to the Shahid ban has come to light, and that we know more about the fact that, you know, this is something that other platforms are likely doing as well. This is something that we don't see a lot of.
And now we're talking about Meta. Have you seen the feature where it says now you can limit political content on your phone? And do you think that would kind of put a limit to organizations or publishers already on the platform?
Yeah, I think it will. I think this is the latest in a long line of changes that platforms are making to step back from news and current affairs. You know, we've seen a number of different platforms making moves over the last year to essentially kind of distance themselves from news media, because it is a very inherently tricky topic to have on the platform and has a whole number of different contentious issues around content moderation. So I think this is the latest in a long line of those. We saw things last year regarding Threads, which is obviously a kind of Meta's Twitter clone, essentially. And the head of that platform, Adam Mosseri, who used to work at Facebook, said that there is no place for news and politics on Threads. You know, it's not something that they feel is worth the effort, basically. So yeah, people will start to see less political content, I think, going forward on these platforms, which is not something they have necessarily signed up for. You know, people do go to Instagram and to Threads and to Facebook to get this kind of content. The fact that they've had this decision made for them may change how users behave and where they go to get that content remains to be seen.
I definitely agree, because I was speaking to TikTok and I think we've asked them for a comment on this subject, and then their response was, "We are an entertainment platform." And that's how majority of these social platforms think. But then there is an increase in these content within the younger generation. So then it's going to be like an imbalance. Would there be a new platform that comes in and says, you know what, we are open-handedly, like, we can take in any kind of content you want, we don't mind, come to our platform? Or do you think they would kind of look at these things and then be like, you know what, we might have to remove the ban from here, we might have to ease our rules here? What are your thoughts on that?
We are seeing, I think, a rise in the nature of decentralized platforms like Blue Sky and like Mastodon. Decentralized typically means that there's no holistic view of the rules. There's no policy set by a certain team within those organizations. Different communities can have different rules according to their norms and their standards and their ways of communicating. And Blue Sky is a really interesting example of that. It recently launched moderation filters, which people can essentially overlay onto their feeds in order to get certain kinds of content removed before it kind of comes to them. So it's a bit like filtering or banning users, if you've ever had to do that yourself. And so that essentially avoids you having to engage with that content in the first place. So for example, you know, if you have a particular sports team that you don't want to see posts about, you know, you could subscribe to a moderation filter that screens that stuff out. And this is a really interesting development. It, you know, requires platforms to be built in different ways and for them to be thought of in a kind of layered approach, what Blue Sky called stackable moderation, and Meta and others aren't designed to be like that. But it is a really interesting development we're seeing, that people can start to kind of customize their experience much more than previously, where you were given a news feed and that was essentially, you know, decided for you based upon the algorithm and what you engaged with. I think in many ways, we won't see a platform like that in the future.
That's it for today. Please remember to follow and subscribe to get all the latest episodes as soon as they come out. This episode was produced by Dua Farid and Arthur Edison, and I'm your host, Dreya Abdullahi.